Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Personal Transformation. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard, West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always say. Well, straight off with, I was supposed to have a guest here tonight, but unfortunately, Deb has not showed up yet. I don't know if it's because of traffic or weather or whatever the case may be, but I'm going to go ahead and start anyway, and I'm going to give you a general idea of some of the things that Deb would have been talking about, and I have no idea if she's going to show up now, so I'm kind of going into this blind, if I can put it in that term, and that's kind of what it is. So I'm just going to wing it the best I can, as I have always. And I certainly hope you enjoyed our guests from last week. Helen Giuliani, I should say, like the Mayor Giuliani from New York City. And she is an interventionist addiction specialist. I was so happy to have her on board here last week. And now this week, well, I had scheduled for Deb Adams to be here, and Deb Adams is a entrepreneur to start off with. She's a holistic nutritionist, biofeedback specialist, and she's also an energy psychology practitioner. So I'm going to touch base on some of those things that I've posted here in regards to what she does. And let me be very clear, I'm not an authority on this one whatsoever. I know that when I studied martial arts, we talked about energy all the time and inner chi. That's how we made reference to it. But it's not quite the same thing as an energy psychology practitioner in regards to how I'm making a reference or if I'm making a comparison. Not really anything of the sort, other than I'm just talking about energy. So within that fact, I should also mention, too, that if you are in crisis and I've triggered you in any way or sort, if you are in the greater Toronto area, you can call the Gerstein Center, downtown Toronto, at 416-929-5200. And if you are in further down the Eastern Corridor towards Ottawa, Montreal, Belleville, Brockville, places like that, Cornwall, what am I forgetting here? Anyway, Thousand Islands, that's what I meant to say. You can call the Colborne Crisis Center, which is an 800 number, which is located in Durham, Ontario. But it is an 800 number at 742-1890. And if you are in the York region, you can call 905-310-2673. Now, if you are in the West End, you can call Peel Mobile Crisis at 905-278-9036. And for my friends across the border in the U.S. and Canada here as well, and if you're not able to call any of those numbers that I've mentioned earlier, you can call RAIN at 1-800-656-4674 or 1-800-656-HOPE. And that is for Canada or the U.S., and they're available 24 hours a day. And if you can go onto their website as well, just Google RAIN, and the link will take you right to it. And they also have a chat line on the RAIN website as well, if you need any kind of assistance. So, folks, just bear with me here tonight. I'm hoping the devil show up. I don't know what's going on, but nevertheless, this is their second time trying to do this, so hopefully it'll work out. So, As I've posted on my Blog Talk page what Deb Adams does, I'm going to talk a little bit about what energy psychology is. And let me be very clear, as I've stated in the beginning of the program, that I am not an authority on this whatsoever. I have a pretty good insight to what's involved and what they do, but I am no way an authority on this. So I'm quoting Dr. Fernstein, a clinical psychologist and a major proponent of energy psychology. He describes the approach of acupuncture. Well, he describes doing this sort of work is like acupuncture without needles. Although there are many variations of energy psychology, most are well-known and commonly practiced treatments utilizing techniques from acupuncture and acupressure, such as body tapping, for example. Body tapping involves stimulating of the points, on the body, also targeted in acupuncture. So basically what you're saying, if you're at all familiar with acupuncture, and when you go to that practitioner that does that, they stick these little pins into you if you weren't aware of that. And what they do is they certain points in your body. Again, if you Google this, I really suggest you do this, and you'll get a better idea what I'm talking about. That if you go there, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, what I'm saying is that the little pins that they put in your body, they get these little nerve endings in your body. And then it does whatever it's supposed to do. It's supposed to unblock it or do whatever. But I know that acupuncturists that do this, I know they do a combination of, the acupuncture, which is the needle inside. And then there's a certain amount of energy healing on top of that. And that could be, that would be something just as simple as that individual or that doctor or practitioner holding their hand up against near your body, not even touching your body. They don't even have to touch your body. Most energy healers, they use their energy from their body, do not even touch you. And if they do, it's very, very rare that they do that. And they just keep it just a slight distance away from your body. And then they're able to channel their energy to that part of your body that needs fixing. Psychology is rather physical interventions in energy psychology, such as body tapping, are meant to work in a combination within a person therapy, becoming mentally engaged in feelings and thoughts and or behaviors that are targets for the change in therapy. So basically what I'm saying here is that by using the tapping, I know that one of our facilitators, actually Deb Mayberry, it's funny, it's Deb Adams and Deb Mayberry. Well, I've had Deb in here many, many times, but actually Deb Mayberry and Deb Adams are actually business partners. So how coincidental is that? But anyway, I know that Deb, my point being, is she does tapping. And I've seen her do this many times. She's even done it on me from time to time. Although I'm not too keen on people doing that to me, but I wanted to give it a try just to see what sort of an effect it would have on me. And I know that I could even do it myself. In fact, if you understand about using it or practicing it, that you can apply it to yourself, only provided you know what you're doing, at least to a certain degree. Anyway, you're not going to hurt yourself, but at least it'd be nice to know that when you are applying it to yourself, that you are you're doing the right thing. And again, that's something you could find out online. And just because you do it once or twice will not make you an authority on it. Trust me. But I know it does work, and I've seen people come to the gatehouse, and I know that Deb has done this, and I know other people have done this as well. And by using energy, by using the tapping, for example, as I'm talking about, if you're a survivor of childhood sexual abuse or some kind of trauma, it doesn't even have to be what I just stated, but some kind of trauma, and by applying the tapping, it helps, and it's supposed to alleviate those symptoms. Again, like I say, I'm very clear. I'm not an authority on this whatsoever, and nor do I profess to be at the same time. So, energy psychology combines exposure therapy and researched and I lost myself here when I was talking about the tapping, and I moved on to something else. So such as body tapping are meant to work in a combination with the person in therapy becoming mentally engaged in the feelings and thoughts and or behaviors that are targets for change in therapy. So that's kind of what I was saying about how they combine it. Like I know Deb was coming in here tonight. She applies tapping just like the other Deb I was talking about, and then she does a bunch of other things for the energy healing, which I can't really say because I'd rather have her talking about it herself. An individual therapy for post-traumatic stress might be asked to imagine a traumatic event or experience while stimulating the performing body tapping, for example, and an individual with a phobia with spiders might perform body tapping while being gradually exposed to the spider. Well, now you kind of get a general concept of what their body tapping is involved. But I know that Deb, the lady, my guest, is supposed to be here tonight. I know she does a bunch of different things, and tapping was just one of the things that that she does, as the other Deb does, as I just talked about. Let me see, I'm gonna make sure I'm missing anything here. Okay, well, you know what? I'm gonna leave that at that. Again, like I say, I don't profess to be an expert in this, and I'm just not. But I'm gonna tell you a little bit more about Deb Adams. I have some information here that what she does, and from her website. And if you go to her website, let me just find it here for you. Actually, it's even posted on my Blog Talk Radio. If you go to beyourselfforhealth.weebly.com, and you'll get a really you'll get a better insight of what Deb does. But I think what I'm going to do is, rather than try to talk my way through this and funnel my way through this, pretending that I know what I'm talking about, which I don't, I'm just going to move on to something else. And what I'm going to do in the interim, hopefully she shows up, is that I'm going to talk about some stuff that's going on around here. It's been very, very busy around the gatehouse, meaning that, well, for example, now tonight, we've switched our drop-ins from Sundays now to Thursday nights. So now, once a week, we have a drop-in on Sundays. Now we have them on Thursday nights. Now, we also have going on here at the gatehouse tonight here as well, we also have what we call a phase two art therapy group. And it basically was an extension of the first original one, which is 12 weeks. And basically what they've done is they've added another 12 weeks onto it. So you've got 24 weeks over a period of a year, which you can do, or a year and a half, or a couple of years if you like. And it's proved to be very, very successful, as we do have a lot of participants in the house here doing this. And the feedback I'm getting from the participants that are doing it has been phenomenal. And I know the two ladies that are doing it, both Lacey and Alethea, are doing just a beautiful job of helping these participants through this process. Okay, another thing I need to mention as well, we will be having another partners group coming up. We have not established a date yet, but I would say it's going to be in May. And I will post that, and it'll be actually posted on our website, I would say within the next week or so, regarding when that will be happening. And it will be, I'm guessing it'll probably be the first or the second week of May, but don't quote me on that, as I'm not 100% sure. I know we were talking about it the other day. We just haven't firmed up the date. But it is happening for sure. And if you are in the Greater Toronto Area or abroad and you want to travel, all you got to do is call the gatehouse at 255-5900 and just speak with anyone of the staff and volunteers, or and they'll be more than happy to put you on the list for attending this. Okay, what else now in regards to that? Okay, so I know we're also going to be doing another assist program coming up, which will be in May as well. Again, that is not confirmed. Brad and I, my partner, we picked, well, rather, we're thinking about the weekend of the 27th of the 28th of May, but unfortunately, I can't do that weekend. On that weekend, I'm going to be in a bowling tournament. But anyway, so again, that's another one thing that, as you see, we've already been advertising for it already, but we haven't confirmed up on the date in regards to that. So we are taking people who want to join in our next assist training, which is 2 days at 16 hours, and very, very intense. And I guarantee you, you won't be disappointed in regards to what the skills you're going to pick up, especially if you work in, if you're a frontline worker, or you work, like whether you work in social services or anything where you're dealing with public, you're dealing with the public on either in a frontline role, like I was talking about, or not even. If you're a teacher in a school, for example, dealing with kids, another great example of where this assist training would really, really come in handy. Okay, so what else do I need to mention as well before I get on something? I should really pick something I should talk about, I mean, aside from myself, but I'll think about that as I'm going along here. So what else am I missing here? Yes, okay, I mentioned about the assist. I mentioned about the partners group. And, oh, yes, this is also very important as well, which is kind of the part of the partners program as well, which we have here at the house. And we do have a support network for non-survivors of childhood sexual abuse. So basically, if your partner has been sexually abused and you've been with this individual for X or however long, and you've seen them at their worst and you've seen them at their best, and you've also seen them where they've come to their worst into their best, and has you totally confused, not totally understanding why your partner is doing what they're doing. You know, so what we provide here at the Gatehouse is we provide, we have a drop-in as well, like we have here tonight. We have a drop-in. So we have a drop-in once a month for non-survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Caroline and Joe usually take care of that. And it's usually on Thursdays as well. But we've had really, really good response and feedback in regards to that. So we will continue with that program. And I know I'm always hearing from partners of survivors of childhood sexual abuse, their partners, that they've noticed huge, huge changes in the individuals for coming here. But they struggle themselves understanding why or what or whom or what's going on with the individual in regards to, well, their healing, their growth. I mean, it would be very, very confusing, you know, especially, I can give you many different scenarios, but all I know is that this support is needed. And I don't know really anybody else that's doing that sort of thing. So I would highly encourage you that if you are, you're in a relationship or you're, it doesn't even have to be an intimate relationship. It could be your best friend, for heaven's sakes. And you can come here and we'll give you support, help you understand what your partner has gone through or your friend has gone through, and help you understand all the emotional turmoil that they've gone through, and help you have a better understanding on how to, well, how to deal with it in a self-respecting way, for one thing, and also understanding that the person, your friend or your spouse, for example, well, it'll make it easier for you to understand what they're going through. And that's the idea of the support program. Even when we do the support programs on the weekend for the partners, we take the non-survivor aside and we help them with their questions in regards to what their partner may be going through, whether through the growth or all aspects in regarding their growth for moving forward. So we try to help them out as best as possible. And please keep in mind too that we are not marriage therapists or anything of the sort. We are not. Our counselors. All we do is we provide peer support, just as we do with the rest of our programs. So basically, we never, as I love saying this, we never tell anybody what to do. It's always about your experience. And being able to exercise your voice, where a lot of survivors of childhood sexual abuse, well, basically we've had our voices squashed. And the idea is coming here and finding power in your voice again. And it's the same thing with the partners group. So, and we, you know, we really, really encourage when we do the partners groups, we really encourage their partners to, you know, to speak up. And to talk, because a lot of what happens a lot of times is that in a relationship like that, especially with a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, there's a lot of times what happens is that, well, what would be a good way to say this? Well, communication is not always the best, depending on the individual, where they are in their own healing. But one thing I've learned from myself and what I've seen from a lot of others that have been through this process is that once we learn to once we find her voice, excuse me, once we find her voice like me, well, for example, I can't say everybody's going to be like me, but like, for example, like me, well, then you can't shut me up. Okay, that's supposed to be funny, but anyway. So the idea is to give this kind of support where, like I say, there's not really any, I don't think there's anything like this. Well, there's not anything like this in Canada anyway. In the U.S., I know there is. They have different programs, and I shouldn't say there's nothing like this in here in Canada, but there's nothing where, well, for example, while our services, what we provide here, are free, where if you were to go to a group or a therapist or something, you would have to pay. And then they would combine a combination of peer support, and CBT, for example, and other different forms of therapy. So, you know, it's good to know that if you were a non-survivor, I hate even saying that, but if you're a non-survivor and you have no support, well, you'd be pleasantly surprised that you can get support. And you'll be able to talk to people that have gone through the same experience or experiences all at the same time. And you'll find that when you talk to these people, when they're together, that they really relate and understand. Well, they relate to one another and have empathy towards one another and totally understand and get what their partner is going through. Oh, yes. Thank you, Flower Child. She's talking about talking about emotional freedom therapy or EFT tapping. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. And again, like I say, I'm no authority on that. All I know is that the two devs I've talked about, they both do it. And I've had it done to myself, but not to any extent. And I only had it done for myself just as to see what it's all about. So I know that if I was to continue on with it, I might have done something to help myself, but I never did. So that's when I say, when I don't know anything about it, I don't know anything about it. And thank you for that comment, Flower Child, in regards to bringing me up to speed to what it actually really, what it is. And the thing is, I've heard this before, but it just hasn't sunk in regards to what it really means and what it's supposed to do and how it's supposed to help you. But, you know, all those things. And anyway, I can't emphasize enough to say that I'm not an authority on it. But okay, so moving on. And what am I talking about now? Okay, so I've talked about that. So now let me see. Now, is there anything else that's going up here? Oh yes. We have our annual conference coming up, which will be June 7th, and that'll be a Friday, and it'll be at Humber College. And anybody who wishes to attend, again, there will be a cost involved in that, which is a cost of $150. We do have several keynote speakers, including myself, but we do have some really, really good speakers coming along. I don't have them right here in front of me, which I will talk about later on in the future. And so that's another important thing that's coming up at the Gatehouse. And what else could I say as well? It'll probably come to me. But anyway, you know, I'm kind of lost for words tonight, I guess, in some ways, because here I was expecting to be talking to somebody, and it didn't work out that way. I think I will move on to something. And what can I possibly talk about that's really, really important in regards to our survivors? Well, I could talk about a lot of things. I could talk, I could talk about anger. Or I could talk about shame. I could talk about guilt. I can talk about our inner child or the child within. I could talk about, I'm sure you're not going to talk about the weather outside because it's raining like hell right now. Cats and dogs. I could talk about boundaries. You know, I could talk about sexuality. I could talk about a lot of different things. But what would be really relevant tonight to talk about that really sticks out to me, and which would really be important? I think all those things I've talked about would be really, really, really important to talk about. And there never seems to be enough time to talk about it. It just needs to be done. See what I mean? I'm having a really tough time here tonight. So I think what I'm going to do is say I can't talk about myself. I wish I could just put music on and rock the place, but I can't even do that because I don't have anything here in front of me. Trust me, if I would have had my hands on my collection, I could have played music for the next 100 years, no trouble whatsoever. So, folks, I apologize. Deb is not here, and I think she would be a lot more interesting to listen to than myself. Living with Abuse just tweeted me and said, well, thank you for saying that I'm doing great, but how about talking with the inner child? Well, I guess that would be a really good topic to talk about. The inner child or the child within. Now, I know that when we do the groups here, we, so the, for example, well, with the men, we call it the inner child. And I know with the women's groups, we call it the child within. I mean, obviously, there's a subtle difference between us, obviously. But nevertheless, they are great topics. And when I talk about the inner child, what does the inner child mean to you? Actually, I'm just starting something here now. I think we've found a topic which we can move on to. Okay. Well, living with abuse makes another comment. Or when you speak out to family, getting the abuse is not believed. Maybe. Well, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, yes. So if you've been abused, for example, and you tell your family, if I'm getting this correctly, if I'm getting this right, living with abuse, you're talking about that if you talk, you speak out to your family that's getting abused, and then you're not believed. Am I correct in saying so? I think that's what you're asking me or what you're saying. Well, yes, we quite often hear about that here at the house anyway, where, for example, an individual will come in here, and although it's not really kind of related to the inner child, but I guess in a sense it is, because in a sense that if you tell a family member, if I'm getting this correctly, getting this right, if you're talking to a family member and then they don't believe you, or they say something like, my uncle could never do that, or my father could never do that, and basically minimize it and therefore adding more shame, adding more anger, adding more, a whole bunch of things. And even the inner child, making that inner child very, very angry because you're not being acknowledged for something that happened to you. Yes, or they invalidate like it's not important. Yeah, exactly. And I've heard this many, many, many times. And or like in the case of supported the abuser. Yeah, I've heard this so many times where an individual will come into the house and they basically went out on a limb and they've told their family, and they were basically, it was minimized and in a sense basically made them feel like crap all over again, like it never even happened, and didn't believe them. So that is really, really, really wrong. And I mean, most people, I would think most people would be, when it comes to family, I think we'd think most family members would kind of believe one another, but I keep hearing situations where that's not the case at all, where they do, as I've stated, where they minimize the individual and won't validate the fact that even happened. And then then I've seen other situations where it's been a family member that's been abused, the victim, and then they take him to court and charge him, and they still don't believe him. And even though they've been charged and they've been sentenced, and yet they still, they still get off like it's rather they still believe that it's not true. And that is really, really, that's really hard, not being validated in that manner. I know myself personally, I've never really told any of my family other than I've told my daughter. And other than that, the rest of my family has no idea what happened to me. My younger brother, well, he's long gone. My father, I haven't talked to him in years. My mother's passed away. So really, in essence, I do have other relatives, but I haven't talked to them in many, many years. And maybe they even know already. I have no idea. Just from what I do, I have no idea. But the point, what I'm saying is so that I haven't told any of my family members. But it is kind of scary when I think about it, because when I think about the people that have told their family members and they had that reaction where they weren't validated, and they were made to feel kind of almost shameful again for what happened, and almost being re-victimized all over again. Like, well, what can I say? It's so wrong. I know that validation is so important to us survivors when it comes to, you got to think about it now. As a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, one of the things that was done to us as children is we had our voices taken away. And what I mean by that, and this is how it's taken away, if you're not really clear on how that's done, never mind, well, I shouldn't say never mind, but Keep in mind, well, yes, the sexual abuse, but it's after that that's really, really hard. It's the grooming, either before and after, that is really, really effectful. And what I mean by that, for example, now I know that one of my abusers used to do, he would, so I wouldn't talk he used to hit me with a phone book. And that sounds really, really odd and strange. But the reason why he did that is because he wouldn't leave any marks. It would hurt like hell. And as a child, well, that would scare anybody I would think scare anybody. It certainly scared me at the time. And this guy I know was a raving alcoholic. He's dead now. But he would threaten me and tell me that they would hurt me and hurt whoever. But that was his way of controlling me so I would not speak about it. And where this happened, well, I won't say where it was and happened because, well, I know the guy is dead now, but nevertheless, I know there's other individuals that I knew at the time, and I know that some of them, it happened to them as well. And there's a lot more to this story than meets the eye, and I'm not going to get fully into it, but my point being is I'm talking about not being validated when you talk about childhood sexual abuse, and also about being groomed. Now I brought that into the puzzle as well. That a lot of grooming. I've heard many different stories from people coming into the house here how they were groomed to be quiet, and that is the power of the abuser by being able to do that. Is as a child, well, you know, what are you going to do? You're a child. If you got somebody that's, you know, three times your size and threatens to hurt you or to hurt your family, then as a child, then you're going to believe what he's saying and you're not going to say a thing. And I've heard this so many times, never mind my own experiences, but experiences I've heard from others. And it's very, very daunting and in a negative, negative, negative way. And I'm being really, really nice here right now. I could get off into a rant and a ram, but I'm not going to. Just stick with what I'm talking about here. And that is that grooming, if you're not really even familiar with what grooming is, then just go Google grooming sexual abuse, and then you'll get the whole scoop there. So, the inner child. Well, what does the inner child mean for me? I've it's funny, we were having this conversation just not only about a few weeks ago here at the house, and we were talking about the inner child, and I was talking how I made connection with my inner child, which I really haven't really made great connection with my child, inner child. And I know I've talked about this once or twice before, but my time with talking with my inner child, and what we did is actually what we do here at the house is actually a meditation. And the idea behind that is, as I pointed out earlier, well, as a child, we were told to shut up, and then we carry that into adulthood. And within doing so, when we're told to shut up, we also our inner child also shuts up as well. Like basically, when I started being abused, I know that my world was different. You know, Art Lockhart, our founder of the Gatehouse, he often talks about that, how his world had changed profoundly for him the day after he was abused the first time, when he went outside and he talked about how the world looked different and how people were different and everything was just different. I really relate to that. And another thing he's described as well, and I know he's talked about this many, many times, is that I remember he said one thing he did for himself too is he said he used to take a bath. And he would sit there for hours, and he'd scrub, and he'd scrub, and he'd scrub, because that's how dirty he felt from his experience and what happened to him. And I can totally relate to that. Totally, totally relate to that. Granted, I didn't do the bath thing, but I certainly did do what he did in regards to shutting out the world and realizing that everything was different and seemed different. It was different. It was different. It was crazy. I remember being a child in the 60s. And the last century, and life was so different after that, so different. And when I'm thinking about it now and talking about it now, I haven't really put a whole lot of thought into it, other than the thought that I had put into it at that time is just remembering what happened to me, and my memories are way, way too vivid for my experiences to, you know, I have a hard time with that sometimes. I remember very, very, and I remember even the insignificant things I remember, which some people may think are insignificant, such as smells and things like that. I remember that like it was yesterday. And like I was describing about what I was saying, how his life had changed for him and how the world seemed to be different. And that's how it was with me as well. But my inner child, back to that, trying to make that connection was not an easy thing. And it made it really hard for me to make that connection. So I did it the first time. I remember doing it with the facilitators when this was like 6 years ago, plus now that I'd done this. And I couldn't do, I mean, I did the exercise, but I could not make that connection. So basically when I did it, it's kind of like my inner child or a child within me basically just shut me off and would not even talk to me. And I can imagine, just imagine what you might be thinking out there. And what the hell am I talking about? What do you mean why my child wouldn't talk to me? Well, that's kind of how it was with me. I couldn't make connections. So I had to wait. I waited another, probably about another year, almost a year. And then I came and I did the phase two program at the Gatehouse, which my facilitators were Kelly and Al. And I did it again. This time I had Kelly do it. The only difference, well, there's a couple of differences here. One, obviously, there's a gender difference. So basically, I had a woman do the meditation for me this time. And the last time it was done for me, prior to that, was done by a man. Now, if there's, whether that was a difference because of gender, I have no idea. I do know that when I did it the first time, I was in really, really rough shape mentally, right? So therefore, maybe I did not have the capacity to even conceive, even to try to make that connection. But anyway, to make a long story short, I did it the second time and I actually made the connection. And by talking with my inner child, I was able to do this. It brought me back to it. I was able to think back and go back to a place where I knew I was safe. And I'll describe that to you now. And maybe you might even want to do the same thing too, if you think about it, to bring a nice, pleasant memory to yourself. And maybe sad too. I hope not, but hopefully it's a happy memory. But when I went back, I remembered as a child going, I would go up to my uncle's cottage up in northern Quebec, and it was in Manawaki. It wasn't that far north, but it was far enough north in Quebec. And it was Manawaki, Quebec. It was on the Indian Reserve in Manawaki. And my uncle, he had a cottage on a lake all to himself. I remember it was beautiful. It had no, we had no electricity. It was an old home. It was probably 150 years old, built by settlers long before he went there. And he had the house. And one thing I do remember about the place was all the black bears. There was tons of black bears around there, tons and tons of bears. And they always had to watch yourself. I remember, I know I'm sidetracking you a little bit, but I remember, sure, I'm just sharing this memory with you. I remember walking out of the house, and I remember, well, obviously we didn't have toilets inside the house because we had no power, right? But remember, when we walked to the outhouse, we had to go with a gun or something that could make a loud noise because there was that many bears around that. Now imagine, they were black bears, or they weren't grizzly bears or anything like that, or polar bears. They were just black bears, but still, you don't mess with them. You know, like a sow with cubs, you don't mess with that, or even a male bear or a papa bear, you don't mess with them because when they're fully grown, they're going to be 500 pounds, 600 pounds. And trust me, no human's going to come anywhere near them and have any effect on them. So I know what, maybe anyway, we'd walk out to the outhouse and we'd have to bring something with us to make a loud noise just so we'd scare any of the bears off because you just never know. Thank God, I know a couple of times I've gone to the outhouse. This was the funny part where I've had to stay in there until somebody came out because there were bears there and I didn't have anything with me. So I had to yell for help, but the bears would never leave. So then my uncle or one of my cousins would come up with something and make a loud noise, a horn or in a vehicle or something like that, just to scare the bears away. Now, if you know anything about bears, and if you're at all black bears, I know they're very curious animals. Well, I think all bears are curious anyway, but anyway, I know these ones were always very, very curious. We always had to be very careful what we left outside because the bears would get into it. And I know that from my experience, even in Northern Ontario, there's lots of black bears up there as well. And I know from going to the dumps, up, let's say, go around Prairie Sound area, for example, there's lots of moose, black bear, that sort of thing anyway up there anyway. Okay, now I've really gotten sidetracked. Back to what I'm talking about, the NHL. My point being is that I would go outside, anyway, my memory brought me back to there, and my memories were me going fishing with my uncle and my cousins. Those were the best memories, even to this day. I remember going there and as a child, and those were always very pleasant memories. And why I remember that is because when I was at home, it was very unsafe for me. And I know that when I was living in one home and I went from home to home and family members' homes, because my parents were divorced, and my father didn't look after me didn't look after myself or my brother, so we went from family member to family member. My father had custody of us, but still he would bring us from home to home. And I remember over a period of probably a period of 10 years, we moved like 4 or 5 times. So we never really settled for any amount of time. Never the same school, different friends, different people. And what made it worse for that was being abused from home to home to home. And let me be very clear, it was never a family member. It was always somebody outside the family. Just saying. So that was my memory doing this meditation. And this is what we do at the Gatehouse when we do the inner child. We both do it with the women's groups and with the men's groups. The fact is, the inner child is such a heavy, heavy topic here that we incorporate into 3 weeks of your first 15 weeks here. So you don't even talk about your inner self or your inner child until the 9th week that you are here. And we do it for 3 weeks. So, and yes, you're right, living with abuse. Our childhood is taken from us after that point. Yeah, it's so unfair. You're absolutely right. And that's basically what I'm talking about now, that's for sure. It is so, so unfair. I've heard this so many, many times. But anyway, so with the inner child, so what happens is in week 9, we come in and part of the exercise, what we do, and I recommend you even do this at home, and if you do a meditation at home, I really recommend that you do it with a really trusting person. Because if you do it yourself, and I know you can go online and you can already, you can do your own meditation and go back and talk to your inner self, and it's just that simply done. Well, I shouldn't say it's that simply done. It's simply said and simply to do it. It's just a question of that if you do it, how will it affect you? So you might want to think twice or think really hard or carefully that if you do decide to do a meditation for yourself and talk to your inner child, that you might want to have somebody with you when you do that. Because depending on your experiences as a child, whether they were traumatic, if they were traumatic, then I would really recommend you have somebody with you, because you might get upset. I have no idea what you're going to do, how you're going to react. I know that when I did it the first time, it brought tears to my eyes. Not a lot, but it still brought tears to my eyes. And again, I as I've stated, I have very vivid memories. Unfortunately, I'm able to remember way, way too much. Like an elephant, if I can use that example, as people always say, but I remember everything. And, you know, I know when I did that exercise, for example, you know, when I talk about remembering, well, I remembered it, but it was never really a forethought in my thoughts, you know, throughout the years. And I would tend to think more about what happened to me versus the good points or the good. And that was a good point in my life. You know, all I know is that when I used to go up to my uncle's cottage, it was always, always a safe place to go. I knew I wasn't going to be abused. I can go, I can fish and hang out. I knew that my uncle would always feed us really, really good. I used to love eating at my uncle's because the stuff he used to cook all the time was incredible. And being a bushman that he was, and native as well, he would always have some, I don't know, all the dishes were always good. I mean, whether we were eating game or we were eating off the land, it was always very, very good, the meals that he used to serve us. And I remember that's only too well to this day. Those memories were always, always good. So that was the exercise we did. We did the meditation. I went back to that, and it brought me to that point. But like I've stated, the inner child is a three-week exercise that we do here at the house. And another thing we ask the individuals to do or the participants to do, and again, we do this both with the men's groups and with the women's groups, we ask them to do write two letters. And we ask them also to switch hands. So basically, as an adult, you write a letter to your child. And as a child, we ask the participant to write a letter to the adult. Now, by using two different hands, you got the left hand and you got the right hand. So obviously, there's going to be differences. And as a child, well, you know that you, as a child, if you remember, your writing was not maybe all that great. Well, maybe it was, but it wasn't probably as good as it is now, being an adult. My point being. So, in that exercise, we find to be very, 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 very helpful as well. And it's a lot like the meditation. So, by doing so, behind the idea behind writing these letters to one another is to, well, for one thing, as an adult, saying hi to your inner self. I know that, from watching it from others and even for myself, I kind of struggled with that thought. Well, why would I want to talk to my child? Like, that seemed to also, my inner child, that actually seemed to be almost kind of, well, pardon the way I pun this, but kind of childish. Like, what possible sense would, or how could this help me in any possible way? Well, actually, it did help me in a lot of ways. And one, well, it made the connection, even though I said it was very minimal. And even to this day, it's still very minimal. So my point I'm trying to make is that with the exercise, by writing letters, what you're doing is you're basically engaging with one with the other. And what I mean by that, I'll elaborate on a little bit further. So by writing a letter as a child to the adults, you're making a handshake, if I can put it in that term, or you're talking to that other person, because you got to remember, as a survivor, has been through this experience. Most of us, when we were children, our childhoods were basically, well, never mind the fact that they were taken away from us, but we were basically shut down. So our voice was shut down. I know that when it happened to me, when I made reference to, like, when I talked about art, for example, I know for me, how my world changed was, it's like I went from the age of 6 to feeling like I was 40. I know that sounds extreme and crazy, but there's more to it than that. And what I mean by that is that when that happened to me, I wanted to be grown up. And that was, which was horrible, because I should be thinking like a child. I should be playing with the other kids. I should be riding my bike. I should be doing all these kid things. But that didn't happen to me. I know that I wanted to just be with adults after that experience. Because I was getting attention, which I never got from my family to begin with, although it was the wrong kind of attention, but still, nevertheless, that was the attention I would get. And I would want to be grown. I wanted to be grown up right away. I know that, I wanted to smoke. I wanted to drink. I wanted to do all the things that grown-ups did. I wanted to drink coffee, for example, all those things from a very, very young age. Well, I didn't have a whole lot of guidance around me, so it was kind of, and I think about it now, even then, I think about, oh my God, I think of, like, I was the age of 9 and 10 and I was smoking cigarettes. Isn't that kind of crazy? But that was actually the fact. That was what actually happened. It was easy. They're easy to get. Granted, the 60s were a lot different than the 70s and 80s and even today, but it was easy to get. It was easy for me just to walk, especially when I was living with my father and his second wife. It was easy for me just to go and grab a couple of cigarettes and go outside and smoke them. Granted, at that age, what the hell am I going to know what to do other than I'm going to smoke it and cough on it? But still, those would be some of the things I would do to want to feel grown up. And I know even at that age, I know even probably by the age of 9 and 10, I was tasting alcohol. I wasn't drinking it to any extent where I would, where I would catch a buzz, for example, or wasn't a daily thing. But my point being is, here I am, a child, and I want to be an adult. And those are part of the components that went along with it. So, and me being a very, very angry child as I was, from my experiences and what were going on, even in school it was horrible. Because I was angry, and I didn't even know why I was angry. My father didn't know why I was angry. My school teacher didn't know why I was angry. Nobody knew why I was angry. Here I am, a child wanting to be 40 years old or a grown up, and I'm angry. Okay, now I'm getting off track again a little bit. Okay, so back to inner child. So, with these letters I'm talking about, now I've tried that as well. And again, with me, like the meditation, it didn't really have a whole lot of effect on me. And I've been able to figure out why that's the case. And I'll share that with you in a moment as well. But anyway, exercise did not work for me well. But although I've seen many, many others do it, and it was a very, very good exercise. And the idea behind it, as I've stated, like the meditation, is to make connection with your inner child. As I've stated as well, when our abuse started, or childhood sex abuse started, that's when we kind of lost that sense of being a child, and where I brought in the thought of wanting to be grown up, as I've been talking about. So these are some pretty crazy components that are added onto this as well. So in the 3 weeks, while we do those two things for once, and what we do, we encourage our participants. First off, there's nothing that you have to do anything, but we encourage our participants that have written the letters to share it with the other participants and them as well. And by doing so, again, this is the beautiful thing about peer support, and there's a bit of CBT involved in this here as well. And if you're unfamiliar with the form, if you're unfamiliar with the term of CBT, I mean cognitive behavioral therapy is what I'm talking about. If you're unfamiliar with that. So by applying that, by those exercises that I'm talking about are actually CBT, what it allows us to do, and the idea behind these exercises is what it does, obviously, number one, is to make that connection with the inner child. And number two, which is really, really important when talking about this stuff, is listening to other people with the same experiences and always keeping in mind that obviously the experiences are not going to be the same, but hearing their stories. And by doing so, like for myself, and I've heard with many, many, many others, what it does is it gave me strength to talk about what happened to me, as it has with the other participants. So it's got a lot of really, really good benefits by doing so. It is very, very hard for a lot of people to do this because it brings up some major, major issues or not so much issues, but pain from the past that we've buried since we were children. So it's just not, well, I hate saying this or hate saying it in this term, but it's just not that simple. It's just not that, you know, it's complicated in its own way in an individual basis, meaning that our experiences are all different. But like I gave you an example of where I didn't make that connection. I had to do the meditation twice in order to make that connection. And then I did the letters. And even then I could not make a connection. So here I am, still being a grown up and not wanting to make that connection with my child. So I know that I've heard from other people that have gone through and done the same thing in the program and where they've had very similar experiences where they, and even in some cases where we asked them to do the exercise and they could not make the connection at all, period, ever. And maybe the individuals that I'm talking about, for example, they were just in a different place and they didn't really even deem it necessary that they did talk with the inner child or didn't talk with the inner child. Granted, they still wrote the letters and still found it to be a beneficial exercise other than writing, depending on your dominant hand. Well, your non-dominant hand will be your child writing, obviously. So therefore, your penmanship will be all over the place. So, I mentioned that it being 3 weeks. I know that within 3 weeks, it takes that long to go through this process. And it's very, very difficult for most, as I know it was for myself, to go through this. And actually get something out of it, something beneficial out of it, whether I can learn from it, or I can, grow from it, And which I kind of did. It kind of helped me in a lot of ways. Well, it made that connection like I talked about going up to my uncle's cottage. But in some ways, it helped me, well, deal with myself better in a lot of ways. Because it's so easy as a survivor to just minimize it myself and put it on a shelf. I often make references about putting it on a shelf. Well, the difference is that when I put it on my shelf when I first came here, I put it on a shelf and I put it in a box. So therefore, I couldn't look at it. Well, now, whenever my experiences or whatever I'm going through, what I do, I'm making reference to the shelf again. I put it on the shelf, but I don't put it in a box. I put it there where I can see it. And by doing so, that's allowed me to move forward. So I put it in a box. That means I'm forgetting about it. I'm burying it. I'm not acknowledging it. I'm not dealing with it. So to me, that was more important than making the connection with the inner child, for example, which I've talked about. Although I still feel I would like to eventually make that connection to whatever degree I'm capable of doing. But nevertheless, it was a beneficial exercise for me trying to do that. And even to this day, I often think about how my facilitator, Kelly, and was able to bring me back to where I would not allow myself to go. And like I said, keep in mind that I'd already done the 15 weeks, and I'd already done a bunch of I did a lot more work helping myself to allow myself to even do this. So, you know, and being the age that I am, and I've seen this in other people, but not just in not just men, but in women as well, around the same age, when you believed all your life that that your voice was invalid, and you're not being validated, that really doesn't help you with your voice. So in a lot of cases, like for myself, for example, not having validation meant that I was able to just bury everything. The analogy I just made about putting it on a shelf and putting it in a box, well, that's basically what I did. And that never helped me in any way at all. It didn't help me move forward. All it did was hold me back. So, yes. And thank you for saying so, living with abuse. Yes, you're right. By putting it into a box, it makes the blank moments more frequent. And disassociating, absolutely. It sure does. But it's really not an easy exercise to do. I know a lot of people struggle with it because I know that even for myself, for example, I can't speak for others, that when I did die, the first time I heard that we were going to go and do that, I thought it was kind of silly and I thought it was a waste of time. Well, maybe even with that thought as well, that might have made it harder for myself. I have no idea. Probably because I didn't believe. I thought it was silly. I thought it was, childish. Pardon the way I pun that, but that's basically what it was to me. And I could not see how that could help me in any way. Well, it did help me a lot of ways, because even though I did only make that connection at one time, it brought me back to good memories. And in my healing here at the Gatehouse, when I came here, I was just focusing on all my bad shit. And through my healing process, I'm always talking about the bad stuff, but I could never remember about any of the good stuff. And don't get me wrong, my whole life wasn't, as a child, wasn't all bad, bad memories. I had some good memories there as well. I just choose to hold on to the bad ones instead of the good ones. And by doing that meditation, by going back, was actually very helpful, because this is what it did for me. And I'll be very, very clear about this. You know how it helped me? It helped me move forward even better. So that little voice that I made connection with was very, very important. Granted, we don't talk much to one another, but it helped me out an awful lot. It allowed me to expand my voice to, like, for what I'm doing here now, for example. It allowed me to do other things. I did a lot of writing, for example, which I've yet to publish, or well, not to publish, but to put it into a blog, which I eventually want to do through my experiences of in my recovery, which I've done a lot of writing on, but I've kept it to myself. Someday I'll put it out as a blog. I know some people out there that are doing it now, and they're very inspirational. You know, it makes me think. Well, I hear, you know, and I got to stop judging myself and thinking about how good of a writer or how bad I am. I got to take that totally out of the equation and just remember that it's about the experiences along the way, along the path that's important, where others can use to help themselves or not. So that's what I'm saying is that by doing that exercise, that's what's helped me. Now, my experience is obviously not going to be your experience or anybody else's experience, but I really firmly believe by doing this exercise is a way of helping you find your voice. So I was able to make that connection with my inner child, and that helped me with my voice. That actually helped me move forward. Minimal as it was that I made the connection, it still made all the difference in regards to me moving forward. Because I remember when I went into the phase two program, I was very, very, very doubtful. And fact is that when I did the phase one program, I stepped aside. I guess I was out of the house for maybe probably 3-4 months before I came back. And in actuality, I was kind of sliding back a little bit. So when I came here to come and do the program, I was resentful. And I know that if I was to speak to Al or Kelly about it today, that, yeah, they would tell you that, because I was very clear in stating that I don't know if this is even going to help me or not. But I ended up sticking it out. I did the 8 weeks, and I ended up doing another 8 weeks, and then they added more, and they made it into 16 weeks. And now I've not only have I done the phase two program a number of times, you know, before and after, but I've also now I co-facilitate groups like that. So I'm very entrenched into that part of the program, and the inner child is great in discovering. Making that connection is, I think it's huge, huge, huge. And I would say for a lot of people, it would be very important for them to make that connection, because, like I say, the biggest thing that happens to us when we are a child is we lose our voice. And within saying so, we lose our voice, we lose a lot of other things. And, not having the confidence to do things in life, you know, it's complicated in its own way, I guess. I don't know. I don't need to analyze it any more than I already have, or think about it any more than I have. All I know is that it works, and it worked for me, and and I think it works for most of the people that do the exercise. But if you're not going to try to do this at home, I really recommend that you have somebody with you when you do it, somebody you trust. And it will be, well, I really believe it'll be beneficial. But if you do a little bit of research before you do it, by yourself at home. I mean, if you're obviously in the gatehouse, you're in a safe place, and there's people around you who are going to help you. But if you're going to do it at home by yourself, I really recommend you have somebody with you that you trust, you know, that's going to look after you. That if you do dive back and you do this meditation, you do dive back to when you were a child, where you've had trauma. Then you want to have somebody there with you when you make that connection, because it could be very painful for you in a lot of different ways, depending on your experiences. So you need to be mindful of that when you're trying to accomplish that. And I can't stress how important it is and how it helped me. Some may deem it as being really insignificant. Well, I don't know. I don't. I was able to make the connection, and I firmly believe that that helped me move a little bit further. Wow, it's after 8 o'clock already. I just blew an hour away. Well, folks, I'm not going to talk a whole lot longer. I really don't know what happened to my guest tonight. I have not heard or anything of the sort, so I don't know. Maybe we were supposed to do it tonight, but I don't know what happened. But I really apologize, and I will try to get Deb back again. Hopefully with something a little more, it'll be three times a charm. It's funny how these things work out sometimes. This is one guest I've been trying to get on for quite a while now. And this is my second strike in regards to getting this individual to come here. So What else could I add in with the inner child that would really be beneficial that you that might be helpful to help you? So we do those exercises like I've talked about. We also encourage our participants while doing this in the 3 weeks to keep track of their emotions best they can. So we ask them to journal. Not all of them will journal. Some of them will take mental notes. I know that for some people journaling is really, really hard, and even in some cases it might be boring to the individual. But when it comes to something like this, it would be really kind of beneficial, meaning that if you're able to self-reflect and think about how you felt when you made that connection. And then we ask participants this when we're dealing with them is, what was it like making that connection, for example? How did it affect you? How do you feel? And then we repeatedly ask them this over a period of 3 weeks, checking in on them to make sure that they're all right. Because it's not an easy exercise for some, and for some people it's they just can't do it. Like for myself, I mean, I did the 3 weeks that I've talked about in regards to doing it, but I did not make the connection. I just couldn't make the connection. And you know, and here's another reason why I think I couldn't make the connection, because I was a very angry person. Well, what I mean by angry is that. What I mean by angry is that I think that what was going on with myself. So my inner child was basically angry me as an adult. Does that make any sense to you? Oh, Paul's bringing me coffee. Jeez, oh, Paul, you're so kind.
Hey, you deserve it, bro. You work hard, man.
Thank you.
You were very hard.
Paul's on our you got a moment?
Well, sure. Adult program coordinator.
Adult program coordinator.
Yeah,
is
that's the official.
That's the official?
Or just friend.
Or just friend. Well, Paul, too, is also does an awful lot around the house here. I'm going to sidetrack here for a little bit, folks. I've been talking about the inner child.
Oh,
my guest did not
cool.
show up tonight, so I don't know what happened. I really hope that Deb's all right.
Yeah, because of the weather and stuff.
Exactly. I think it's because of the weather or something, but I don't know what happened. But we were supposed to do here tonight, but it didn't happen. So I've had to improvise, and I'm rattling my brain and thinking, well, what the hell am I going to talk about? I can think of a lot of things to talk about, but what sits in my head tonight that I could say that's beneficial or not?
Right.
But anyway, I've been talking about the inner child. And so basically I just talked about the 3 weeks. The process of writing a letter, both from the left hand and the right hand, and also talked about the meditation, and I talked about how it affected me, or in my case, how it didn't affect me.
Right.
You know, and even to this day, I really don't have that connection.
Right. Yeah.
And when I talk to other people, they do it very easily. So why and what, I have no idea. But I'm more concerned about sharing the experience and how it affects everybody differently.
It really does. I mean, I don't think there's any one right answer to that one or one way that it happens. It affects everybody differently. It's a deep connection. And sometimes it's a shallow connection. You know, it's like sometimes some people really connect with that inner child and have a really good rapport with them. And some of them just kind of lay back a little bit, you know, and the child, when they say they go through that meditation, that the child really had nothing to say to me. And, you know, I think it takes a couple of times of doing that exercise to really connect.
Well, and that's what I explained earlier, that when I did it the first time, it didn't work for me at all.
Right.
I did it the second time, and Kelly was my facilitator, Kelly and Al.
Yeah.
And I was able to make it. But after that, no.
No, I get that. You know, I had a really kind of cool connection the first time I did that. But it was at a distance, and I realized later, and it's been, you know, I've been here for a few years now. It wasn't until really a little bit what are we in here so a little bit last year near the fall that I realized that I still didn't like my inner child, and that's where that was coming from. The sort of standoffishness was more of I still blamed my inner child for what happened to us, and blamed him for not standing up for us and blamed him for all these things. And that was a great insight because I went, well, wait a minute. That's not really true. Why am I blaming a child?
Yeah.
You know, I often use this exercise when people blame themselves about when we're doing one-on-ones or when we're a group, when people often blame themselves or blame the child that they were for what happened to them. And I usually just say this. I usually ask them, do you know any, like if let's say they were 8 or 9 when it happened, do you know any 8 or 9-year-olds? And if they came to you and said, you know, this is what's happening to me, the exact same story that happened to you. And then they said to you, you know, Uncle Paul or Paul, it's my fault, right? Well, and I asked, what would you say to that child? I think all of us would say the same thing. It's absolutely not your fault. That's not right what happened to you. Adults shouldn't do that to children. It's not your fault. And when they say that, then I look at them and I ask, so why can't you say that for yourself?
Good question.
And that's a great question because it really gets them to think. It really is. And that's what I did for myself this when I was processing what was going on for me. And it was nice because I was able to really be honest with myself. And I think I shared this with you. I was away not too long ago, and I had a really triggering moment for my inner child. And I actually let them come out now, finally. I let them come out and have the tantrum they've always wanted to have. And for the next 4 hours, I was screaming and crying and screaming at my abusers, how could you have done this to me, and really let them out. And it was very, very cathartic. It was something that I realized that I hadn't allowed to happen that really needed to happen. So for me, that sort of experience was wonderful, and it's built from that 3 weeks of inner child.
Yeah, I even to this day, I've never been able really to make that kind of connection, right? You know, and I've heard other adults go through the same experience.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
You know, and I really don't really focus a whole lot of time on that.
Right.
I just I'm still doing what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And again, nobody says everybody's healing path is different and unique. And nobody says that has to happen.
No, it doesn't.
You know, I'm just really glad when it finally did because it really felt very cathartic for me. It felt like something that needed to happen for me. And but that didn't stop me from going on before, moving on before. So and I look at it this, Stuart. As we figured out along our healing journey, I'm using we, and I hope I can do that, right? Because I think we've talked about that. Everything will come when it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And not before.
Yeah.
So I never judge whether something's happened or not happened. That's just where you are on your healing path.
Yeah.
And if it's supposed to happen, eventually it will.
Yeah.
So that's the only time I'm going to use we. The rest of it's I statements and what's happened to me. So
which we focus on around here quite a bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, we always emphasize.
And talking about that, sir, I'm running drop-in tonight.
Yeah,
so we're just on a quick break.
Yeah, so thank you for having me a coffee.
Absolutely. And thank you for the chat on Inner Child. It is a tough one.
Oh, it's very tough.
There is no really right or wrong way to do Inner Child. Just leave yourself open and see where it goes.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I did find, I'll just say really quickly, that really did help me, though, even before I was able to have that cathartic experience and really connect with the inner child, was just allowing them to come out and having some self-care. So when I say inner child self-care for myself, that might involve eating a bunch of candy that I liked when I was a kid. Or I loved this one day. I was up at the Pass of Courage, and we had an afternoon off, and one of the other survivors there, it was raining. I said, shall we really, you know, you're saying do self-care for your inner child. I said, do you really want to do this? He said, yeah, okay. So we took our shoes and socks off. We went out into the rain and jumped in mud puddles. And you know how when you're young, you try to soak your buddy?
Oh, yeah.
So we were trying to soak each other, and we just were giggling, and it was really nice to let the inner child out and do some self-care for him. So,
totally fun.
To this day, I still pull out a coloring book every so often and color. Just let them out. So.
And they do have adult coloring books out there, by the way.
You know it.
Yeah.
You know it.
Thanks again, Paul.
My pleasure.
Great to see you.
Yeah, I'll see you after.
Enjoy the coffee.
Thanks.
Thanks for all the great work you're doing, brother.
Mm, thank you. Likewise. Yeah, so thank you, Paul. He stopped by. He brings me a coffee, which he's done many, many times, and he's chatted here with us for a couple of minutes, which I'm grateful that he does. He's got always had lots of great insight and big help around the house. And And I hope you heard what he was saying about the inner child, and he's absolutely right. You know, and one of the biggest things, like I've even said it too, that it affects us all differently. Not all of us are able to make that connection. And if you're not able to make that connection, do I think about daily that if I haven't made that connection, my life is not going to be, going to move forward? Well, it has. You know, I mean, it would be nice if I could do a little bit more, but I really don't emphasize a whole lot on, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I want to heal, but, and move forward, but I am. So I think that's all that matters. And without picking it apart or analyzing it any further, you know, it's totally unnecessary. And part of the process of coming here is that the process is just letting it happen. It's not getting all built up and then being disappointed that it didn't happen. The point is, in the process of working it out and talking about it, and while being supported at the same time, talking about it and hearing other stories, getting being validated and exercising your voice, those are the important things. Not that your inner child is not important. I'm just saying is that within it affecting everybody differently, well, that's how it affected me. And as I've said earlier, some people that have done the inner child exercise could not make that connection whatsoever. And some of you even heard said it was totally irrelevant and thought it was childish. Again, pardon the pun, but that's exactly what it was. That's where they were coming from. The Living With Abuse made a couple more comments. Art therapy and inner child, maybe? Yes, absolutely. I found when I did this, my art was like that of 11-year-old, which was roughly the age I was. Okay, I can totally get that. I really get what you're saying. Thanks for sharing that. Living With Abuse, greatly appreciate that. Yeah, like... the inner child. Jeez. But I do know as well that that if I, like even myself personally, if even if I hadn't made that connection, like I've stated, I'm still moving forward, and that's all that matters. Okay, I don't think I'm going to talk a whole lot longer. I've pretty much talked myself out, and again, I apologize for not. Well, it's out of my control. What can I do? I apologize. My guests did not come in tonight. Would have been a really good show. I'm going to find out what happened, and I'll let you know next week. And if all goes well, I'll have her in here for next week. But I'll post it and advertise it as well. In fact, that she's here. And I don't know what happened. But anyway, I'll figure that out and get back to you on that. So I think, folks, I think I'm going to just stop right here right now. And I'll leave it as it is. I appreciate your input, Living With Abuse and Flower Child. Thank you. Again, I apologize for not having a guest here tonight. It's just the way it worked out. And we'll do better the next time. But folks, thank you. Have a good night. Oh, and you know what? Self-care. Take care of yourselves. Go for an ice cream. Go for a walk. I don't know. Do something... do something nice for yourself, but take care of yourselves. Hopefully I didn't trigger you in any way out there that are listening or who might be listening later on, but please take care of yourselves. Self-care is most important for yourself. So folks, I'm going to bid you adieu, bid you good night, and I'll be back next week, hopefully with a guest this time. Thank you. Good night.